Inconceivable!
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough roads to get up to 88.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Hello, everybody, and welcome again to the Good Trash Genre Cast, where we, the UCO Film Society, deep in the bowels of the liberal arts building, somewhere locked away in the halls of the English department, record a podcast describing the movies you will not learn about in a film studies class, but are available to you on Netflix. And we apply some good film theory and have some good fun at the same time while discussing them. My name is Dustin Sells. I am a grad student here at UCO in the 20th to 21st Century Studies program. I will begin to my right. Who is this man right here?
I'm Dalton Stewart. I am a senior in the sociology department here at UCO.
And to my left,
I'm Arthur Gordon. I'm a grad student in the 20th and 21st century literature film studies program as well.
And we have two new hosts tonight. Sir, could you introduce yourself?
My name is John Goodine. I'm an adjunct instructor here in the English department, also in the mass communications department. And this is my first podcast, so I'm very excited. And I'd like to say hello to the listener at home. And I'm very excited to see how this goes.
We're happy to have you, John.
We have one other host with us this evening. Ma'am, could you introduce yourself, please?
I am Grace, and I am a poli-sci major.
Thank you, Grace. We're so glad to have you here today. Today's movie is Clue from 1985. And we do have a synopsis from the voice of the theater. Mr. Arthur Gordon, could you tell us that?
Based on a best-selling game by Parker Brothers, six guests are invited to a strange house and must cooperate with the staff to solve a murder mystery.
Thank you, Arthur Gordon, for that amazing synopsis. So, we are going to talk a little bit about what we thought about the movie. I'm going to begin with one of our guests tonight. John, what did you think about the movie?
Well, I think given the ridiculous parameters that the actors had to work with within, they did as well as they could. God bless them.
Wow.
It was interesting. It was funny. You know, I actually laughed out loud a couple of times. My kid, who just turned three today, watched a little bit of it with me. He got a little scared when they're running around the house, you know, for a while, but, you know, wasn't too bad. But yeah, it was okay. It was campy because it was supposed to be, obviously, but didn't love it. No.
Well, Dalton, what'd you think since you took that inhalation of breath? It seems to indicate that you want to say something.
I do want to say something. Our listeners from last week may well remember I was not excited to watch this movie.
They may recall that.
Dreading is a word that comes to mind, and I'm happy to say I was wrong. I was completely wrong. I think the only question that matters in terms of a comedy is it funny? Do the jokes work? And yeah, the jokes work really well. This is a really funny movie. It's got some issues in places, I'll get into that later. But I laughed really hard. There are so many wonderful lines in this movie, like Tim Curry excitedly shouting, "A double negative!" Like,
right?
This is a weird movie that's just got this really interesting sensibility, this kind of screwball American comedy meets British Python-esque humor, and they kind of meet in the middle and produce something really interesting, I think.
A beautiful, beautiful baby.
A beautiful baby.
Called this
a weird-looking baby. Called Clue.
Called Clue. Grace, what did you think about the movie?
I love this movie. I love Tim, and I think some of the little jokes they have are hilarious. Like, how many husbands have you had? Mine or the women's?
I love that line.
I love Mrs. White. I love her to death.
And flames! The side of my face!
And I always crack up at that. I am your ceiling tenogram. cracking up every single time.
Oh, fantastic. All right, Arthur, what'd you think?
This has been one of my favorites for a while. I think it's hilarious. I think it's great for quoting, hanging out with friends to watch. Overall, I've enjoyed this movie for a long time, and it's been on my shelf for a long time. So,
fantastic. I also watched the movie and liked it. I laughed out loud at times. And I have to say, though, I really remember it being funnier than it was. And some of the jokes just didn't quite work. Some of the timing at times kind of seemed a little off to me as I watched the movie. I still have a nostalgic place in my heart for the movie, but overall it was not as effective as I remembered it being.
I remember really liking the multiple endings. I remember that actually being my favorite part the first time I watched it. And
did
I think
you
that's
like
something
it this time?
No, I actually still like it. I still think it's something that works best about the movie, which was interesting to find out. Original theatrical run, you got a different ending depending on what print of the film you got.
Yeah.
And that would really hurt this movie, I think.
I would prefer it that way.
I think it'd be interesting.
I hated it. I was like, no, just give me one ending.
I thought it was a lot of fun. But anyway, yes, I was not excited to watch this movie and ended up really liking it. So, I don't know. Maybe my memory is a little fuzzy.
I think it just goes to show when it comes to the kinds of movies that we're watching on this particular podcast and movies in general is that rewatches are always worthwhile enterprises.
Yeah.
Upon the recommendations of others, there are movies that no one recommends that you ever see again. And, you know, those movies like Transformers 2, you know, don't probably merit that sort of revisiting. Because no one recommends you do that.
No.
But at the same time, you know, there are those other movies like, you know, The Clue that we talked about, The Fifth Element, that upon rewatching, they make grow on a person. And so that's just something, you know, maybe the listener can take home and think about for their future movie watching. Let's do a little analysis, though. Let's talk about what this movie means and then how we can really kind of think about this a little bit deeper. And I will begin to my left. Mr. Arthur Gordon, what did you think about this?
I think the biggest strength of this movie is the comedy. And a lot of comedies focus either on the dialogue and the writing or on the physical aspect of comedy and the pratfalls and the slapstick. This movie combines both of those so well. The physical comedy of it and the writing is top-notch. And the actors, they're so deadpan at times, but they sell the comedy so well in facial expression and body language. And I think that sells the comedy of this film. At the same time, there's such a strong energy here when the whole cast is together. And it's powerful and it's fun. But I think the movie is hurt at times, especially in pacing and its effect comically, when that cast splits up. I'm thinking particularly when they first split up to search the house.
Mm-hmm.
I think the pacing there really is affected.
Mm. Definitely.
And the movie for me slows down at that moment. And I kind of lose track of it. I don't really get as invested in it. But when that cast is together, they have such a strong chemistry and a strong bond that it blows up. And so, the cast here is fantastic. McKean and Mole and Lloyd.
Oh, man. So good.
And Tim Curry. And interestingly,
Tim freaking Curry. I actually wrote Tim freaking Curry in my notes.
The Wadsworth character was originally supposed to be played or had been approached to a John Cleese.
Really?
Which would have been really fun, I think.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
But Tim Curry
just
and Michael McKean for me, just still Mr. Green and
Tim Show.
And Wadsworth. That dynamic. Sit!
It's great.
You know?
Right. It's great.
And for me, the tone of this movie is set in those first 5 minutes. Opens up. Cloudy, rainy, stormy, ominous music playing in the background. Wadsworth shows up to the house, pulls these huge animal bones out to feed these ferocious dogs. The music is swelling. He turns and just steps in it. The music dies, and he just glances over.
And there's like eight callbacks to that.
Yeah.
Like eight.
The recurring
jokes.
It keeps
going.
Well, this movie is full of the recurring jokes. The smell of the shoe, you know.
So many.
Yvette smells it.
Or take a drink every time and one guy looks down the cleavage.
Yeah, I'm callbacks.
And then the running together. They run to this room together. They run to that. I mean, the recurring jokes. And I think just the writing of the comedy is what really makes this movie.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Outstanding observations, Arthur. Let's go to Dalton.
Yeah, I've got a few things to talk about this week. I do want to touch on the comedy because I'm a huge comedy nerd. The callbacks in this movie are fantastic. There's a really, and this is something, this interplay between comedy acting and comedy writing, just working together. One does not work without the other. The actors in this movie are just fantastic comedians all around. Physical comedy, their delivery, their timing, facially, they're just great comedians. And this film is something that's very difficult to do. I definitely agree with you, Arthur. I think it falls apart for about 20 minutes in the middle of the movie when they're searching the house and part of Tim Curry's running around explaining everything. And that works really well because it's funny and it does that thing where it goes on for so long that it stops being funny and then circles back around to being funny again. Mm-hmm. You get so exhausted with you're like, good Lord, let this end. And by the time they're done running around, you're laughing again.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that they did really well at. I do have social issues to talk about today.
Yeah.
A lot. More than I expected. I did want to touch on something before I get into that, though. and that is adaptations are not something new. There seems to be this culture of writing and film that's taken hold of, you know, demonizing Hollywood for comic book adaptations and reboots and remakes. This is not something new, people. Gone with the Wind came out in 1939. That is an adaptation of a work of literature.
It's Harry Potter.
It's something that's been continuing forever. Mm-hmm. This is not anything new. Wizard of Oz, I mean...
I will interject right there. You know, we can kind of look at the birth of cinema in 1895, I believe, and in 1896 we're already seeing literary adaptations.
Exactly.
And so it has been there since the birth of cinema.
That's and, cool. I mean, granted, I bemoan the release of Battleship as much as the next person, but, you know, almost 30 years ago we have Clue coming out. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is nothing new. This is just part of the business.
Difference is Clue was good.
Well, that's, yeah. Well, here's the deal. I assume Battleship is terrible. But I didn't see it, so
it's
I...
It's terrible.
I think you can
it.
Say that.
There you go. I think I can stand aside and say it's probably not very good. But anyway, I just wanted to point out, this is not something new. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important to keep in mind. But yeah, early on we have people keeping up with appearances. Clearly, as soon as they arrive at this house, they know something's amiss. And everybody's still keeping up with table manners. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's addressed several times. Mr. Green's terrible, you know, accident-prone lack of table manners gets, you know, daggerized from everyone. We have a lot of talk about government misconduct and communism is a red herring, which I loved. Mm-hmm. Such a great line. But yeah, I mean, the very beginning you have Joseph McCarthy on the television in the kitchen. So we're kind of talking a lot about the things that are done to distract you from what's important early on. That could be both a narrative device, but it also might be a... I think there's definitely a lot of satire of life in the improper New England life in the 50s going on in this movie. Homophobia is addressed, which is interesting. Psychological practice, ethics, I mean, all kinds of sexual taboos get addressed in this film. Specifically lines about un-American. There's a whole conversation about what is un-American. This is Mr. Boddy's whole motivation for blackmailing these people. Un-Americanism.
Mm-hmm. The most American thing he could come up with is...
Capitalism, yeah. Which is genius. Yeah. So definitely some serious social issues there going on. I do love Tim Curry crying about his wife being a socialist. Not everyone's perfect. Like, it's so funny.
Not even that she was a socialist. She had friends
that were socialists. Yeah, very, very funny stuff there. I actually wrote in my notes, socialists, frowny face. And just one other thing that kind of ties back into... keeping up with appearances. There's a line that killed me. Don't get blood on the sofa.
Right.
They try not to get blood on the sofa because there's three dead people in this house. They have to keep up with appearances. Which I just think that's hysterical to me.
Outstanding. Good stuff. I appreciate that. John, what did you think about the movie?
Well, I started my analysis of it, maybe I shouldn't have, before I even watched it, when I heard the title, which is Clue, and I was like, like the game?
Yes, John, exactly like the game.
And I was like, oh, man. I was, I don't know if you are, you guys are Mr. Show fans, Mr. Show with Bob and David?
Yes, yes.
I know okay. Oh, yeah. This thing.
The, if you definitely. If you aren't familiar with it, watch it. To the listener at home, watch Mr. Show with Bob and David.
Do it.
It reminded me of the skit where they're talking about Hollywood and how they will make a movie about anything that's profitable. And they've done research and they're like, we've researched all of the, you know, Daily Shopper, you know, newspapers, the Penny Savers, and this coupon is the most popular coupon in America right now. So we're making a movie about this coupon, and it's for tube socks. It's a coupon for tube socks, and so they make a movie about it, and they're dumbfounded why nobody went to see it. Because, well, people use this coupon, people love the coupon, why don't they love the movie? So I was kind of like, oh, man, is it something like that where they're like, well, this is the most popular board game right now. Let's make a movie about it. And so I was a little my mind was just already tainted. I didn't know who was in it. You know, I loved Christopher Lloyd in general. I loved him in this. I liked Martin Mull a lot. But you were talking about lines. One of my favorite was Martin Mull when things have happened. They put dead bodies on the couch. Some other dead bodies have disappeared, and he goes back to, you know, wait, let me check and make sure the dead bodies are still where we left them. Okay, good. Two dead bodies in there. Everything's fine.
Yes. Yes. Oh, sorry, right.
And I love Michael McKean and everything else he's in. I thought I wasn't as impressed with him in this.
Really?
Not that I saw him doing stuff and was like, ooh, bad Michael McKean. Yeah. That was a mistake. I just felt like, well, they didn't really use him. Okay. He didn't have an opportunity.
I think he stole scenes. I mean,
I didn't find any scenes stolen by Michael McKean.
He was really going all out on the physical comedy. I mean, mm-hmm. he committed okay. fully.
Yeah, the two of the times I laughed out loud are at the very beginning when the cook rang a gong or the bell rang or at the door or whatever, and he, you know, throws his drink on whatever woman he's nearest.
Yvette.
So I was cracking up about that. But I couldn't help but think as I was watching it, I was like, man, you know, there's some really good one-liners in here, but they've got to, you know, they've got a person called Mr. Body, and of course he's got to die, and then they've got to search the house, and they've got all these weapons. Okay, everyone must have a different weapon, and you have a rope. And I was like, how is this woman going to use a rope as a weapon? Like, okay, I want you to put this around your neck and stand up on this chair. It was just, a lot of it was implausible, and I was like, but they have to do it because that's what the game is like. And I was like, how cool would this movie have been if they didn't have to work within those parameters? So yeah. I was like, you know, with this cast and the people writing, it would have been, to me, much, much better if it wasn't based on a game. Not because I'm like, oh, based on a game, that's, you know, they're just trying to market and sell more games, but because I really think that it held it back, possibly.
That's a fair analysis. We appreciate that. Yeah. Now, Grace, what do you think?
For me, I've always loved how normal they are about everything that's so over the top that's going on. It's like Tim Curry has them running around and they're like, he's, you know, like talking a million words in like a minute. He's like, and everybody's just treating it like it's normal. Like they shut him up or they tell him to hurry up once in a while, but they're still following back and forth and they're still like doing all this crazy stuff with him. And I, for me, like Tim makes the movie. I know you said that they were, like, they thought about John Cleese. I don't think I would have enjoyed it as much just because Tim Curry has that, you know, over the, his personality is him. It's not like, oh, he's going to tone it down. Just everything is just, he's just it. So I love it because of Tim Curry. And of course, I have a preference towards Miss White. And I love Miss White and like the quotes and the whole men should be like tissues, soft, you know, soft and disposable. So I don't know. That's just I don't think I can analyze it well enough because the whole time I'm just having like this Tim Curry is amazing, and then, so I can't really. The whole time I'm just like, he's hilarious, he's amazing. So I have no proper analysis.
I definitely have to say the hardest I laughed in this entire movie is during third ending, Miss White going, I hated her so much. Just like she peaks on that second word, and I'm like, she's such a restrained character throughout the rest of that movie, and then just out of nowhere makes a total turn and kills me.
Flames.
Just like just loses her ability to make sense.
I love when she walks out amazing. And they ask her if she saw, no, I think it's Mr. Green who stands up and he's like, is everybody okay? And she's just like, ah!
The scenes where all of the principal characters are allowed to bounce dialogue back and forth with each other. Those are definitely scenes that worked the best
you
in this movie.
You have to mention when the cop is looking around the house.
We don't have to mention it. You can mention
it. I feel like he's looking around the house and Mr. Green is like so worried and they're using the bodies.
so macabre and weird and hilarious.
So like, they're like, Miss White is on the couch with Mr. Body, and it looks like they're making out, and then the cook is like...
I actually wrote down this line, dead drunk, dead right. Love it.
I can promise you he won't be driving home.
Yeah. For me, it was Christopher Lloyd. Every line he said.
He was great.
He was the one who was cracking me up.
Well, fantastic. I'm glad we all thought it was also funny. I'm going to do the least funny thing possible and talk about why things are funny.
I got into that too. I just didn't think anybody would be interested in inside baseball, but I want to hear you talk comedy baseball.
Well, because I want to talk about film theory and, again, you know, analysis to this. You know, the big movement in film that makes movies American, or at least Hollywood movies Hollywood, is this thing called continuity editing, where things naturally flow from one thing to another. There's a causal chain from this to that. And what comedy does is it breaks the chain up. It disrupts the chain.
Comedy's all about change, absolutely.
And so what happens happens is the least expected thing. You know, Tim Curry steps in it. We figure, okay, that's a one and done. And then it's not.
Again.
Making the use of puns, you know, repeated throughout the film. Again, those callbacks as they keep coming back and coming back. You know, Bordwell in classical Hollywood cinema, it's kind of antagonistic. Not quite antagonistic. I guess ambivalent towards comedy as really thoroughly American film, and talks about it being genderfied and codified and conventionalized. But I want to say that comedy is so funny because it is utterly unexpected. You just don't want to see that thing happen next, or don't expect to see that thing happen next, whatever it
may
be.
That's what it's all about, yeah.
And I think that's why Clue works, is because it starts out serious and it kind of acts like it's going to be this kind of serious whodunit, and then these madcap moments happen. And like Arthur said, it's this mix of the physical comedy of a Buster Keaton movie, you know, on top of the purely verbal comedy of, say, something like a contemporary film like The Princess Bride, where it's all about the words and the language and the witticism and those things that are being used.
I don't think that word means what you think it means.
Inconceivable. That should be on the front of the show.
Huh, gee, I wonder.
So those kind of things I see going on in the movie, and I think that's part of why it's just so fantastic, is the way it just disrupts your otherwise conventional attitudes, and why subversion in American culture happens so easily in comedy. That's the place where you can begin to make things change, is because it does disarm you, but you're expecting to be disarmed. And that's a powerful time for societal and cultural change. I think comedy is underused for that end, and would recommend more of that in the future, Hollywood, if you're listening to me. So
They're not.
All right, well, let's do the final verdict on the film. Shall it go on the shelf or the trash? Arthur Gordon?
I'm going to say give it a watch. Put it on the shelf. I think it's fun. Definitely pull out for parties, having friends over, that kind of thing. So keep it.
Dalton, what do you think?
I think you need to... I'm going to put it on the shelf. You need to leave it on the shelf long enough to forget all of the jokes and then bring it back around into circulation.
John, what do you think?
I was going to say much the same. If you've got it on the shelf already, watch it every few years, that's fine. But if it's not there, I wouldn't rush out and buy it.
Grace?
Shelf, I think, is a good go-to movie for when you're not really thinking and you just want to, like, just something to laugh at. So, good go-to movie, I think.
I'm going to recommend your friend Shelf when you're out shopping to talk your friend into buying it. That way you can borrow it periodically.
Well done.
That way you're not out the coin. All right, now let's move on to our game for the day, which is going to be, we're going to recast the movie Clue. We're going to say that we're going to be shooting a board
they
game.
They are.
No, they're not.
Scheduled for 2013 release. Somebody they are in the process of remaking this film. Oh. Well, let's get the work done now.
All right, let's
what? Help. They're remaking it?
That's awful.
Hollywood, I know you're not listening. Do it for me now.
But this is a part of a huge way. We saw Battleship, and they've also optioned the rights for a Ouija movie as well. So this isn't...
Oh. I already saw that movie. Totally. It's called Paranormal Activity.
Yeah, you'd think so.
So let's do the work for Hollywood, since Hollywood appears to be doing it anyway against its own better judgment. Arthur, how would you cast the movie?
All right. Clue 2013. For the director, I'm going to put another Brit in there. I'm going to pick Edgar Wright. I think he could capture this kind of quirkiness. To go in there for Wadsworth, Simon Pegg. Those two have a great chemistry together. I think Simon Pegg could do some really good work there. Colonel Mustard, Bryan Cranston. Before Walter White, he was Malcolm's dad. He's got a great sense of comedic timing. And you can see it in Malcolm and also in a run on How I Met Your Mother.
I'm looking at Arthur with a face that says, damn it, I wish I'd thought of that. That's good.
Professor Plum, somebody that can play sleazy and subtle, Bill Murray. I would like to see Bill Murray take on that role. Miss Scarlet, this is going to sound a little goofy, Jennifer Garner. And I'm basing this solely on her little cameo in Catch Me If You Can. Mrs. White, Charlize Theron, she's got a great sense of comedic timing, and she can be cold. So I think she could pull it off. Green, Jason Bateman, he's a solid straight guy. He can do comedy. I think he works there. Peacock, Meryl Streep.
Ha!
I would like to see her. She is a great character actress, and I think she could have a lot of fun here as Mrs. Peacock. And for Yvette, Scarlett Johansson. You don't need a lot in Yvette, but I think Scarlett Johansson could bring something to it. For the little players, Mr. Body, the Telegram Girl, the driver, the cop, and the FBI, I think just some cameos. The Telegram Girl, Jemma Mays from Glee. She plays Emma. She's the school counselor.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Body, Robert De Niro. I think had that look. That,
oh man,
that little that's rough, fantastic. Black manly kind of look.
I'm sure he's available.
The driver, the driver Ed Helms, the cop Danny Glover, and for the FBI agent Bill Nighy. Oh, I want Bill Nighy in here.
I have to say that I put Danny Glover in the same position.
Isn't Danny Glover getting too old for this? Are we allowed to curse?
No.
Okay. Well,
we keep it a PG.
All right, Dalton. Come on now. Go ahead and tell us what's going on.
All right, Wadsworth. I really, really struggle on this one. I try to cast people similarly. I actually didn't realize there was a remake of this coming out until after I built my list. So I kind of tried to make parallels to the current actors in some ways. I thought about Eddie Izzard as Wadsworth for purely for another English comedic actor who got his start in drag. That was actually, the drag thing was an accident, but I mean, the coincidence cannot be denied. But I ended up landing on Tom Lennon of Reno 911 fame and The State. I love Tom Lennon. Mm-hmm. He's great with timing, great with the physical comedy. I think he's got a lot of attributes that would play really well in this film. For Mrs. Peacock, I went with none other than Leslie Knope herself, Amy Poehler. I love Amy Poehler so much. I think she's got that real great quirkiness. I think she could lend to Mrs. Peacock. I struggled to come up with a Mrs. White. I really did. I thought about it. I kind of thought about Tina Fey for a second, just because they're fun together. And, you know, maybe she could break typecasting on that. But it's kind of different than anything she's done. So I really struggled to come up with a Mrs. White, because I really wanted to cast traditionally comedic actors in this film, and that was one I struggled with. Professor Plum, I wanted to think of somebody weird. It's funny you mentioned Mr. Show, because I actually thought Bob Odenkirk and or David Cross as Mr. Plum. I think they could both pull that part off very well. They both have a certain, or can pull off sleaze in a hilarious way. Paul Rudd from Mr. Green. He's getting...
Good call.
I love Paul Rudd. You know, he's getting a little too much work. I honestly, I love you, Rudd. But I'm getting a little tired of seeing him. Let me rephrase that. He's not perfect for every part, and they want him to play leading man. Mm-hmm. And as you can see in Anchorman, he's much better as straight man, just weird straight man. And that is exactly what Mr. Green is in this movie.
60% of the time, he works every time.
Well said. For Colonel Mustard, I thought weird gruffness. Gruffness that never comes off seriously. So you gotta go Will Arnett.
Okay.
It made me think, I actually did almost go with Jason Bateman for Mr. Green, and then I realized I was putting together Arrested Development reunion, which is what I really want.
Aren't they doing that?
We are getting that. And Miss Scarlet, I apologize. That was another one I struggled with. I was trying to think of who is a not necessarily physically attractive female comic, but a sexy female comic. She just walks on the screen, and you're like, oh, I'm paying attention now. And there isn't a female comic that I could think of off the top of my head that really has that presence on screen. I thought for a while about it, and I couldn't come up with anything. So I failed in two counts on this recasting. And I didn't bother to recast the cameos. Sorry, guys.
That is all right. That's good stuff. We appreciate hearing that. John, how would you recast the movie?
Okay, well, if you were doing a comedy,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't recast it. But I was thinking, what if you were doing, you know, a serious murder mystery, you know, let's make this creepy, let's make it all serious. I just did the main people. To take the place of Christopher Lloyd, I've got David Strathairn.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Martin Mull, Stephen Tobolowsky. I like names that are really difficult to
pronounce. I like Stephen Tobolowsky. He could work in a comedy version of it as well, too.
He could, yeah. If you haven't seen Stephen Tobolowsky's Birthday Party, it's a documentary where basically all it is him sitting around telling stories that he's, you know, accrued.
Which is a conceit of his podcast, as I understand. He's got a very popular podcast.
Could be.
The Tobolowsky Files, where he basically tells Hollywood stories.
Very popular. So, if you haven't seen that, check it out. Michael McKean, I figure you've got, you know, Michael McKean, you're going for somebody who can also do serious, Christopher Guest.
Good call.
Is they're buddies, right? It would be like swapping one Spinal Tap for another. So, and if you remember, Christopher Guest had an amazing... I don't even remember that it's Christopher Guest every time I watch A Few Good Men. And he's got that short spot as the doctor. He's only on the stand. You know, Tom Cruise is questioning it. It's very brief.
Whoa! It is!
Yeah, that's him, man.
Mind blown.
Yeah. And then for Tim Curry, Willem Dafoe, I like.
Definitely.
That'd be fun.
time.
Then now I like the first ending. If it's serious, if we're doing a series, the first ending works for me, and so I would have the killer be Frances McDormand.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good
yes.
Call.
Yes.
And the maid I would have be Maggie Gyllenhaal, and that's as far as I got.
Fantastic. Okay. All right. Good stuff. Grace, how would you do this?
I didn't really come up with anybody, but somebody that I think would work with Dalton's list would be, she's a comedian, her name is Mary Bradford, but I think she would be great as
Maria Bamford, yes, no, I'm sorry, Amy Poehler, you're out. Maria Bamford is in as Mrs. Peacock.
She is amazing with the voice.
So weird and hilarious.
And she could go from being completely serious to like, I'm doing baby Jesus's voice, to like...
That's how she does her voice too. No, that's a good call, actually. Yeah. She could do... basically anyone in that movie.
Good stuff.
Other than that, I think my problem is, are they really going to try to remake this? I'm having a hard time believing
it. I'm just telling you what the internet told me.
This, it must be true.
Because what works so well with this is that everything seems so natural, and the problem with comedy is that sometimes it's not funny if it seems like they're acting it out, and that actually seems like their reactions. And
I liked it because this is a group of actors who they... know to just trust the lines and to just read them and be deadpan. And if they remake it, I fear they're going to have, you know, Jack Black and Adam Sandler, who I generally like. I don't love, but I like, but are usually over the top. I know that they can do subtle, Punch Drunk Love, for instance, but, you know.
PTA, yet another shout out on our show.
Where the movie itself is not subtle, but Sandler in it is, except when he's freaking out and destroying. You know, so anyway. But, I'm worried that they're going to get, you know, slapstick.
Okay, well, I've got a list also. My list is on the computer, so you can't look. Here is my list. First of all, Mr. Green is David Spade, I think, and he would play it very well, and I would laugh a lot.
Maybe 10 years ago.
I think an older David Spade will work.
You think he's due for a comeback?
From now.
I think he could do it. Yeah, you could totally be like, "Oh God, he's gay."
See, he's one of the ones I'm worried is too slapsy. Like, what was that movie where like it was a basically an SNL reunion? They were like
grown-ups.
Yeah.
They didn't do such much. Maybe not. And the rest of my picked actors are really not comedians, and I think they can do the subtlety from that point forward. But I felt like, you know, David Spade, just as that Mr. Green, you know, kind of spastic kind of character, I thought that just fit very, very well. For that. Now, moving on down, Miss Scarlet, I would put Anne Hathaway in that role.
I thought about Hathaway.
I think she can be very funny.
I always am thinking about Hathaway.
And she's lovely, and so there's that. Mm-hmm. There's Miss White, I think we could put in Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And she
Did I not think that?
She can channel the Madeline Kahn a little bit.
That's the perfect answer to that question, actually.
She can look pale and tragic.
Exactly. moving on down, Colonel Mustard, Jack Nicholson. As a Colonel Mustard, as this ridiculous and a little sleazy and gruff general type. And he has played that character before. Now, here is my kind of odd man out, black sheep kind of character, is I want to put Philip Seymour Hoffman in as Professor Plum. Because he can do nerdy and quiet and subtle, and do funny and bombastic. And somewhere there in the middle, I think he'd find that character.
Yeah.
And I would trust him with the role of a tweedy, pipe-smoking psychologist there. Yvette, I'm going to put Selma Hayek. And as Yvette, because she's fun and she's pretty.
That's why
she's
a blast.
She has the charisma for the costume. I'll
absolutely.
And she's actually good at comedy. She is good at comedy as well.
And Miss Peacock, I'm putting in Imelda Staunton, who you may not know by name, but she played Dolores Umbridge in the Harry Potter movies. And good at hating her, good at being uptight, good at being. Very proper and prim, and so there's that going for her.
The Pink Lady?
The Pink Lady, yes. And she'd be fantastic for that. The Butler, Wadsworth, I'm going to go out of left field and put Tom Hiddleston of Loki fame.
I like that.
I could swing that.
Yeah.
And see what goes on. Now for my bits of cameo, I think Mr. Body, George Clooney, charisma all over, capitalism, and all of that. I think he's got that nailed. The Telegram Girl, Dakota Fanning, because I want to see her die.
As soon as those words came out of your mouth, I knew that was your reason. You're a sick, sick man.
The driver, Mark Ruffalo, just because I'd like to see him on screen. as mentioned earlier, Danny Glover for the cop. And finally, FBI guy, Patrick Warburton of The Tick fame.
That would be a blast.
And it would be very fun. And I would just like to see him being a Jehovah's Witness for a second.
That'd be hilarious.
I thought it'd be kind of fantastic. So there is that. Those are some great lists we've all put together. Hollywood, you need to be listening because we're doing all your work for you. So let's move on. We got a little listener feedback from the last show.
We did.
Dalton, why don't you share some of that?
Well, we've got some listener feedback from an older show, actually, that I want to address. From our very first episode, our discussion of Assault on Precinct 13, we had a comment on the Podbean site from Grover. Grover said he loved the episode, but wanted to point out that John Carpenter made a film before Assault on Precinct 13 called Dark Star.
Mm-hmm.
I was aware of that. What I was trying to mention was that this was John Carpenter's first movie where his name appeared above the title. But I do appreciate our listeners keeping us honest and fact-checking for us. So thank you very much for that, Grover. Last week, we did a brief discussion for our game about what we thought the Oscar race was going to look like. So I put out the call on our Twitter account to our listeners. What were some of your favorite films of this year so far? So I've got a few. At Deadwords with a Z on Twitter said simply Paranorman.
Hmm.
I haven't seen it. I really wanted to. Mm-hmm. It's one I've
heard good
pretty
things.
Bummed
yeah.
I didn't get around
it's
to.
Cute.
Brigham in 29 Palms, California said The Avengers was his favorite film of the year.
It's a fun popcorn
it's
flick.
It's a fun popcorn flick. We also have Kirsten and Norman saying the very same thing. The Avengers, really popular with Good Trash listeners. Graham in Oklahoma City said Cabin in the Woods. Definitely a good call in my book. And finally, we had this comment from @Nick_Sanford, who reviewed The Master for us last week, demanding we lift our embargo on Netflix and demanded that we screen the Texas Chainsaw Massacre as part of Halloween, which, as you know, is coming. So to that end, we're not lifting our embargo, but we're doing something in that vein. Dustin?
Before we do that, we got to do what we always do at the end, which is we got to talk about what's got us fired up this week in pop culture. So, Arthur, what's got you fired up?
We got two things. The first is the Lone Ranger trailer has been released, starring Johnny Depp, Armie Hammer, directed by Gore Verbinski of Pirates fame, and Rango, where he worked with Depp both times. I'm kind of worried about Lone Ranger because I'm scared they're going to put too much emphasis on Johnny Depp as Tonto. And he's going to try and steal the show from the Lone Ranger. I think a lot of times Depp's movies kind of get the focus put on him.
Namely, Johnny Depp, steal the show.
Alice in Wonderland is my big, you know, the big perpetrator here. When the Mad Hatter was probably a little bigger than he should have been, just to sell tickets. So that's going to be my fear with the Lone Ranger. The other thing is, I know that they've named a host for the Oscars, and it is Seth MacFarlane.
Hmm.
And this interests me, and I don't know if I'm worried. I'm worried maybe the Oscars are trying to follow the Golden Globes and the Ricky Gervais popularity. I think this is an interesting move on the Oscars' behalf. And I read something on IMDb today that they've already got parents protesting about McFarlane posting.
Go home.
This is just an interesting call to see how this goes for the Oscars.
All right. That's great stuff, Arthur. Dalton's got you fired up.
Well, I could talk about Looper more, because I did last week, because I saw it, as I said I would, and it was fantastic. And that's really all I need to say about it. It's really good. You should go check it out. I'm more concerned about Taken 2. And not in a good way.
Ooh.
You know, I enjoyed Taken. It wasn't terrible. It was fun. It was fun to watch Oscar Schindler pistol whip half of Europe. But this is something Hollywood is bad at, and it's not adaptations. It's needless sequels. Sometimes you should just let something be a flash in the pan and walk away from there. And it's okay to just let something, well, that was an interesting come-out-of-nowhere hit. I'm glad people liked it. We don't need a sequel to Taken. Also, Taken 2 is a terrible title. Taken Again. Retaken. Taken from Behind. Anything but Taken 2. It's a terrible title. It has no flow. I'm sorry, I got a little ranty there for a moment. I have no interest in this movie, and I love a good schlocky action flick, and I'm just not interested. I'm sorry, Liam Neeson. I still enjoy your work.
He is listening.
He is only.
And if this goes on the internet,
he will find me. And he will kill me.
With a special set of skills, he's learned.
You're going to be taken. Get under the wolf. Wait, wrong movie. Finally, I forgot to mention this last week, which is a shame, because I throw in a mention to Joss Whedon any opportunity I get. Last week was the 10th. Well, every opportunity. Last week was the 10th anniversary of the airing of the pilot of Firefly.
Nice.
It's been 10 years. The brown coats are still going on strong, ladies and gentlemen. I love this show. It's streaming on Netflix, as is its sequel film, Serenity. If you haven't checked them out, what's wrong with you? You saw Avengers. Half the world did. Why aren't you watching Firefly? Go. Stop listening to this. Go watch Firefly.
No, don't listen to him.
Keep listening. But then go watch Firefly. It's just a show that's really deep to my heart. It means a lot to me. So it was just great to see that 10-year anniversary roll around. It's something that it's okay that died early because it makes it that much more special.
Good stuff. John, what's got you fired up this week in pop culture?
Well, my response is going to be really all about what you just said. what Dalton just said.
This is not a visual medium.
People can't see that I pointed at him. I'm sorry, I forgot. The Firefly thing, that's actually close to my heart, too, because I didn't learn about it until, years after it had been canceled, which was a horrible mistake, and put on DVD. My wife was like, here, check this out. And I was like, oh, my God, this is hilarious. And today was my birthday, and if you were Facebook friends
with me, your birthday and your
and son's my son's birthday? Yeah, we have the same birthday.
Oh, that's
my
cute.
Wife was kind enough to work that out for me. She's like, here, I'm going to pop this baby out on your birthday. Happy birthday. I never have to get you anything again. And today,
it's hard to top a son.
Yeah, we're trying to work out so she can have a daughter on her birthday, but, nature. she posted on my Facebook a picture of Nathan Fillion from a long time ago, back when I guess he was like a young heartthrob. He's in cutoff jean shorts and rollerblades.
I didn't see this picture. That's
her gift to me. But you said, you mentioned Taken. Here's my next response to what you were saying, Dalton. If you saw Taken, you were like, meh, it was okay. On Netflix, it was there at least last week. Look for I Saw the Devil. I Saw the Devil.
It still is. It's actually in my queue. I'm afraid to watch it.
Watch that stuff. I was about to curse. Watch it. It's good. It's a South Korean film. It's Taken, but it's better. That's all I can say. If you weren't quite satisfied with Taken, watch this. I suspect that perhaps this is what inspired Taken. But I'm not positive about that. But it's basically the same movie, but infinitely better, and explores much more complex emotions than just, you've taken my daughter, and I'm mad at you, and I'm gonna, chase you down and do horrible things to you. What's excited me is I have is Netflix. I have nothing else. I have no television. So I've got Netflix, and they just had new episodes of Parks and Rec. Which the newest season they put on there, which was season
four?
Yes. Which was amazing.
Great season.
Much better than the season before it, I thought. And they've also just put up new episodes of The Walking Dead, which is exciting to me because I'll watch any post-apocalyptic thing, even if it's acting bad from time to time.
Easy like that.
Even if Kevin Costner's in it, I'll watch it if it's got this post-apocalyptic. Waterworld, Postman, I'll watch those. I'm just interested in the post-apocalyptic thing. So.
Excellent, yeah. Excellent. Gracie, what's got you fired up?
I've been excited for the longest time for Man with the Iron Fist, and it comes out November 3rd, and I'm so excited because I love Larissa, and we all know about how much I like Eli Roth, and I'm excited, and I'm upset it comes after Halloween, so I can't do a Halloween costume. But I'm still excited for Man with the Iron Fist.
Excellent, excellent. I have two things I'm fired up about. One thing I'm proud of, one thing I am feeling a little guilty about. The first being the Hitchcock film that's coming out this November. And it's based on Hitchcock during the making of Psycho, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just a making of kind of movie. Anthony Hopkins is playing Alfred Hitchcock.
Surprising no one.
And I've seen some makeup tests and the posters, and it looks amazingly like Alfred Hitchcock. And I'm kind of a big fan, so that's going to be exciting. And that's kind of my cultured thing that's got me fired up this week that got me excited. Now my brow gets a little lower, and Paranormal Activity 4 is coming out. And I like those movies. I just
really?
Do. I do.
That
I
surprises do. Me from you. I mean, not that they're competent films. I mean, they're fun, but... That's surprising to me that you like them.
They're...
Are you being serious? The eyebrow is throwing me off.
No, I... Seriously, it's coming out, and I'm quite excited. I want to see it. I'm hoping that it will end. That, however, is my lowbrow thing that's got me excited, because I want to see how this thing ends up. And I'm just kind of interested in the story, and it's very, very vague, and I kind of dig that. So... Speaking of scary movies, we have a list of scary films that we're going to look at because it's October. It's that witching month of scary things and creepy whatnots and Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi fame. And so we're going to be looking at a few movies, and we're going to celebrate the great heyday of all horror, which is the 1980s, which is why our earlier listener suggestion about Tucker and Dale versus Evil will continue to be on the back burner. We have taken your suggestion, and
we are doing that movie. We promise.
It will happen, but we're going to just celebrate the 80s right now because we all have this kind of VHS nostalgia for that. And so our first film is going to be Creepshow next week. It is an anthology. We're going to talk a little bit about anthology films. And then we're going to look at Hellraiser, because there must be a slasher, and it's a demonic slasher, so kill many birds.
And it's kind of one of the classic horror films from the 80s.
Absolutely, and it's one oft reference in the meta horror film Cabin in the Woods. And I think
just keeps coming up.
And that's something that needs to happen. We're going to also look at House of the Devil, which is a 2009 film set in the 1980s, released on VHS, so it's dripping with all that 80s nostalgia, and I believe the celebration of all that makes the 80s wonderful will happen in that last episode of the month of October. And then we'll move to something else, I'm sure. But that's kind of what's going up, and coming up next on the pipe, let's just say again goodbye. Thank you so much for listening this week, and we are so glad to have you guys. And just want to remind you, you can follow us all, and you can also follow just the podcast itself at good_trash. You can follow me at Dustin_sells, S-E-L-L-S. You can follow Arthur at R-N-D-T-B-L. Review. You can follow Dalton at Dalton Stewart, S-T-U-A-R-T. And finally, we are on Facebook at facebook.com/GoodTrashGenreCast. You can also follow us on the Tumblr at goodtrashgenrecast.tumblr.com. And we would love to see your comments, your questions, your suggested lists, your suggested movies for us to see, your suggested casts for the movie Clue. Tell us how we're good. Tell us how we're bad. And finally, please subscribe to us on iTunes. We are also available to you that way, as well at Good Trash Genrecast, of all things. So there we are, and we're present. We hope to see you again very soon. And thank you so much for listening.